Welcome to the Suicide Museum. This self-guided recorded tour is made possible by a grant from KSI. At KSI, we put the fun in funeral. Each segment of this recording is tied to an exhibit, all of which are clearly labeled with a letter and a number. If at any time you wish to pause this recording, press the yellow pause button. To play again, press the green play button. To skip to the next exhibit, or to repeat an exhibit, use the blue arrow buttons. When you are finished your tour, please deposit your flash recorder in any of the yellow bins conveniently located throughout the building. Flash recorders are not meant to leave the museum. If you would like a copy of this recording, it is available for download on our website. Let's begin with the artwork in our lobby. Dominating the center of the lobby is Exhibit L1, a sculpture called The Ludovisi Gaul Killing Himself and His Wife, also known as the Galatian Suicide. Despite the cheesy 1970s-era mustache, this sculpture dates back to the 2nd century BC. Our Gaul has already killed his wife to keep her out of the hands of the Greeks, and is about to do himself in with his dagger. It's a pity, isn't it? Such a fine specimen of manhood. You can purchase t-shirts and more with this iconic image on them in our online store at www.cafepress.com/thesuicidemuseum. It was not uncommon in ancient times for conquered peoples to choose suicide over slavery, and was considered an honorable alternative. One famous example is the 960 Jews of Masada, who killed themselves and their children in 74 AD, rather than be captured by the Roman army. You can still find this practice into the 20th century. At the end of the Second World War, the residents of the German town of Demmin found themselves cut off from retreat. Rather than face the invading Soviet soldiers, the townspeople committed suicide en masse by means of drowning, hanging, wrist cutting, and firearms. Let's move on to the north wall of the lobby now, to Exhibit L2, Tina Mann's painting, A New Year's Party in Purgatory for Suicides, in which Liberace makes a guest appearance down from heaven just for the hell of it. The title is almost as long as the canvas. There are 19 celebrities who committed suicide pictured in this painting. There's Sylvia Plath, looking a little gray from the gas in her oven, third from the left in the front row. Can you find and name the other 18 celebrities? I'll give you a hint. Liberace did not commit suicide. The guest list can be found to the right of the painting. Remember to press the pause while you hunt for those celebrities. Prints of this painting and all the artworks here in the Suicide Museum are available in our gift shop. Let's go back across the lobby to the south wall now, where we have framed prints of famous suicide notes. If you're having trouble reading any of these notes, you can find them, along with many more notes we'll see along the way, beautifully photographed and conveniently transcribed and translated in our limited edition book, Notes from the Suicide Museum, available exclusively in our gift shop, Pandora's Box. Beginning on the left, we have an ancient Egyptian papyrus labeled Exhibit Nen 1. It begins, "Death is by my side today, like a well-trodden way. Death is by my sight today, like the longing of a man to see home. I am laden with misery." Even the ancients weren't immune to depression. Next, at N2, we see the work of Sergei Yesenin, a Russian poet who is married to American dancer Isadora Duncan. Yesenin penned his last poem the day before he hanged himself in 1925. The poem is called "Goodbye, My Friend, Goodbye." That brown ink he used? It's his own blood. N3 might look like Japanese vandalism. After being rejected by his true love, Misao Fujimura also penned a poem before he committed suicide in 1903. But he carved his into a tree. It's a beautiful ode to despair and the meaninglessness of life. You can find the original Japanese and an American translation in the book Notes from the Suicide Museum in our gift shop. George Eastman's last words, Exhibit N4, are, "My work here is done. Why wait?" He really gets to the point, doesn't he? At Exhibit N5, we find an upbeat note from Clara Blandick, whom you might know as Auntie M from the 1939 film version of The Wizard of Oz. On April 15, 1962, she wrote, "I am now about to make the great adventure," before killing herself with an overdose of sleeping pills. Kurt Cobain's famous suicide note, Exhibit N6, was addressed to his imaginary childhood friend, Botta. Cobain shot himself on April 5, 1994, devastating an entire generation of teenagers. Last, at N7, we have shock rocker Wendy O. Williams' note. She wrote, "I don't believe that people should take their own lives without deep and thoughtful reflection over a considerable period of time. I do believe strongly, however, that the right to do so is one of the most fundamental rights that anyone in a free society should have." Williams shot herself on April 6, 1998, after feeding the local squirrels. And speaking of the right to die, let's explore the Kevorkian Room, just to your left as you leave the lobby. The Kevorkian Room is dedicated to Dr. Jack Kevorkian, also known as Dr. Death, an activist who fought to legalize physician-assisted suicide. Born in 1928, Kevorkian was a physician, painter, and jazz musician. Our first exhibit, marked K1, is a signed album cover from the band Acid Bath, which features Dr. Kevorkian's painting, "For He Is Raised." Do you know what the rabbits signify? Neither do I. Next to this is exhibit K2, a movie poster for You Don't Know Jack, Al Pacino's 2010 portrayal of Dr. Kevorkian's fight with the state of Michigan over assisted suicide laws. Beside this, we have a photo of Pacino and Dr. Kevorkian, signed by both men. The film won a Golden Globe, 2 Emmys, and copies are available on DVD in our gift shop, Pandora's Box. If you will turn around now, on the wall behind you is exhibit K3, a portrait of Dr. Kevorkian. The quotation under it reads, "If you don't have liberty and self-determination, you've got nothing. That's what this country is built on. And this is the ultimate self-determination, when you determine how and when you're going to die when you're suffering." Wise words from an American hero. To your right now, we continue towards the two glass cases, exhibits K4 and K5. Please note the inscription over the cases is another quote from Dr. Kevorkian. "My ultimate aim is to make euthanasia a positive experience." In the first case is Dr. Kevorkian's original suicide machine, the Thanatron, or death machine. As you can see, there are 3 bags on the machine, feeding into an IV line, which would be hooked up to the patient. Dr. Kevorkian would begin with a saline solution to get the flow started. When the patient was ready, he or she could press the button, which would release barbiturates and sodium thiopental. This solution would put the patient to sleep. The patient's falling arm would switch on the 3rd IV bag, containing pancuronium bromide, which is a muscle relaxant, and potassium chloride, which stops the heart. This machine was used in only 2 known suicides. It's practically brand new. Beside it, at K5, we find the Mercitron, or Mercy Machine, which is elegant in its simplicity. It consists of a canister of carbon monoxide and a gas mask. It should be noted that the carbon monoxide can be a hazard to loved ones who eventually find the patient, and so this device should only be used in a well-ventilated location. Both of these original devices are part of the museum's permanent collection, a purchase made possible by a grant from Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, working to end human suffering. Plans for both these machines can be found in our gift shop. As we exit the Kevorkian room, let me draw your attention to the statue on your left. This statue is from artist Anthony Gormley's multi-site art installation, Event Horizon, which was first exhibited in London in 2007. You may have noticed another Event Horizon statue on our roof when you arrived. Event Horizon consists of 31 identical statues. They were initially placed on rooftops in London, in prominent locations, and sparked quite a few calls to emergency services reporting potential suicides. The exhibition was taken to New York in 2010 and Sao Paulo in 2012 with similar results. Now, let's continue on to our Faces of Suicide exhibit. We are fortunate to have figures on loan from Madame Defarge's Wax Museum. Our first grouping is Alan Turing and Steve Jobs. Turing is the one seated and eating the apple. Alan Turing is thought by many to be the father of computer science and artificial intelligence. After being persecuted for his homosexuality, Turing killed himself on June 8, 1954, by an unusual method. Obsessed with the story of Snow White, he poisoned an apple with cyanide and bit into it. No Prince Charming kissed him back to life. A far more recognizable face in the computer world is Steve Jobs. Is it just a coincidence that Jobs named his company Apple and used an apple with one bite out of it as the logo? While Jobs officially died of cancer, his failure to seek treatment once he was diagnosed makes him a suicide in our books. Turn the corner and we enter a kitchen in the flat at 23 Fitzroy Road, London. It is 4:30 a.m. on February 11, 1963, and renowned poet Sylvia Plath is on her knees contemplating the inside of her oven, where she will lay her head and sleep the last sleep. Note that she has blocked the space under the kitchen door with a wet towel to keep her sleeping children safe. Plath's poetry collection and her semi-autobiographical novel, The Bell Jar, can be found in our gift shop. As you follow the passage to your right, you will travel back in time to ancient Egypt, where Mark Antony and Cleopatra are killing themselves to escape capture by Augustus Caesar's armies. In good Roman fashion, Antony chooses the sword, just like our Gaul in the lobby. Cleopatra prefers the quick and effective poisonous snake bite. Isn't her dress gorgeous? See the maids on either side of her? They will also kill themselves rather than be captured. Those Romans, people were dying to avoid them. Turn the corner again, and you have time-traveled to the 1970s. Here we have our own rock and roll band, 27. Jim Morrison is writing lyrics, Jimi Hendrix and Alan Wilson play guitar, while Pete Ham mans the keyboards and Janis Joplin sings. Jim Morrison of the Doors was found dead on July 3, 1971, in the bathtub of his Paris apartment. It was widely believed that Morrison drank himself to death. However, witnesses have since come forward to state that Morrison died after snorting heroin at a Paris nightclub, and his body was transported back to his apartment to avoid a scandal. Either way, it seems like accidental suicide. No autopsy was performed, so we will never know the real cause of death. Jimi Hendrix died after overdosing on his girlfriend's sleeping pills on November 18, 1970. It wasn't the drugs that killed him, however. He aspirated his own vomit and choked to death. An ugly death for such a talented musician. Remember, if you are going to use sleeping pills, take enough to kill you and avoid Jimmy's fate. Janis Joplin, on vocals, was found dead October 4, 1970, in her hotel room at the Landmark Motor Hotel in Hollywood. She overdosed on heroin. It is impossible to say if this was an accidental suicide or an intentional one. Pete Ham, on keyboards, was a bassist and keyboardist for Badfinger. In 1975, Ham hanged himself in the garage of his Surrey home. His suicide note read, I will not be allowed to love and trust everybody. This is better. P.S. Stan Polly is a soulless bastard. I will take him with me. You can find this note, along with many others, in notes from the Suicide Museum in our gift shop. Alan Blind Owl Wilson, our other guitarist, chose to die quietly in the woods on September 3, 1970. He overdosed on barbiturates and left no note. This was not his first suicide attempt, but it was his last. Why do we call our band 27? All of these musicians are members of the 27 Club. They died at age 27, though not all through suicide. Other members of this club include Brian Jones, Kurt Cobain, and Amy Winehouse. Now we leave rock and roll heaven to enter the early 20th century London study of Sigmund Freud. Is suicidality really a mental illness? The father of psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud himself, committed suicide. Tormented by pain from cancer, Freud requested assistance from his friend Max Schur. Freud died from an overdose of morphine on September 23, 1939. Note the ancient Greek urn on display. This is the final resting place of Freud's ashes. Replicas are available in our gift shop, Pandora's Box. This ends our Faces of Suicide exhibit. Please proceed to the second floor to our Places for Suicide exhibit by taking the stairway to your left or the elevators, which are just past the stairs. Please note that our elevators have been in continuous service since 1979 with no inspections or maintenance. Please remember that all our exhibits are funded by the generosity not only of our corporate sponsors, but people like you through ticket sales, gift shop purchases, donations, and bequests. Along the stairwell are many more suicide notes to entertain you. Please pause this player while you ascend. Welcome to the Places for Suicide exhibit. Worldwide, bridges are the most popular sites for suicide, followed by subway stations. The Nanjing Yangtze River Bridge in Nanjing, China, boasts over 2,000 suicides. Following in a close second, and far better known, is the Golden Gate Bridge of San Francisco. It is believed that if you walk between the towers of the bridge and throw yourself into the waters below, they will cleanse your soul of all pain and trouble. As you traverse our scale replica of the bridge, you will see photos on your left of potential jumpers who have climbed over the rail and are standing on the 32-inch-wide ledge that runs along the side of the bridge. This ledge is literally the last step. Did the people in these photos jump? Take your guess. The answer is under the flap below each photo. And why not try climbing over the railing and standing on that ledge yourself? After all, a replica is only 2 feet off the ground. Call it a dry run. Please pause your player until you have reached the other side of the bridge. Once you exit our Golden Gate replica, one way or another, follow the passageway right to our Jonestown exhibit. Jonestown, as it was called, began in Indiana in the 1950s as an apostolic socialist movement led by Reverend Jim Jones. In the 1970s, the members moved to Guyana to what was officially called the People's Temple Agricultural Project. On November 18, 1978, the residents of Jonestown, over 900 people, committed suicide at Jones' urging. The mass suicide followed an investigation by California Congressman Leo Ryan. Ryan and his party were gunned down at the Port Katuma Airport just before the suicides began, bringing the death toll to 919 persons. We will begin on the right with the glass case marked J1. Inside this case are artifacts from Jonestown. The dried purple material in those cups and syringes is the remains of the actual flavor aid, poisoned with valium, chloral hydrate, cyanide, and promethazine, used by the residents of Jonestown to kill themselves. We often get asked if there is enough cyanide left in those artifacts to kill a person. Sadly, no, there isn't. Our next artifact, Exhibit J2, is one of the drums used to mix up that flavor aid. If you're going to make enough poison soft drink for nearly 1,000 people, you need to think big. In the center of this room is our diorama of the Jonestown site, J3. Each body has been carefully reproduced in miniature and placed exactly where it fell, and includes men, women, and children. The first to take the poison were Rouletta Paul and her 1-year-old infant. They are marked with a small black flag marked 1. Reverend Jim Jones himself is marked with a flag marked J. If you proceed now to J4, the headphone booths, you can listen in on Jones' final broadcast to his members before the distribution of the deadly flavor aid. To convince over 900 people to kill themselves, he must have been a fine speaker. The full 44-minute recording is available in our gift shop, or it can be purchased and downloaded from our website. Please remember to pause this recording while you listen. Did you enjoy Jones' broadcast? Next, we have several reproductions of documents from Jonestown, including suicide notes. Item J5 is particularly interesting. It is a copy of the letter written to Fyodor Timofeyev of the Embassy of the Soviet Union in Guyana, instructing him to transfer all of Jonestown's assets to the Communist Party of Russia, or the USSR, as it was known then. Despite the fact that the people of Jonestown had been overcrowded and laboring in the fields, the assets totaled $7.3 million. This exhibit is funded, in part, by Crap Foods. At Crap, we want you to know that it was Flavor Aid, not our iconically named soft drink mix, that killed people. Our last exhibit in the Suicide Places collection is the Aokigahara Forest at the base of Mount Fuji in Japan, also known as the Suicide Forest. This full-scale diorama is arranged in a ramp which will take you to the 3rd floor and is fully wheelchair accessible. To experience the eerie silence as you wander among the trees, please let this section of the recording finish before you enter Aokigahara. Distributed throughout the forest are the remains of earlier visitors to Aokigahara who went there to end their lives, most by the quiet and peaceful means of hanging or drug overdose. Some are fairly fresh, some have been dead for decades. Please do not disturb their resting places or take souvenirs. There are plenty available in our gift shop, Pandora's Box. Our Places for Suicide exhibit is sponsored by DeShearer Scissors. DeShearer, sharp enough for life on the edge. Did you find Aokigahara calm and restful? Our next exhibit is not for the faint of heart. To bypass this exhibit, please turn to your left and use the blue arrow button to skip over the next recorded section. To enter our Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night exhibit, turn to the right. There are many causes of suicide: depression, psychosis, religious martyrdom, and evil civil accident. In the East, suicide is often used as a protest. In our first exhibit, G1, on your left, we see Thich Quang Duc, who set himself on fire to protest the Vietnam War. Yes, those are real flames, so please stay behind the barrier. Our Duc is made of asbestos and will remain unaffected by the flames, unlike the real Duke. You can see photographs of the aftermath on the wall to the right. Self-immolation is one of the most painful ways to die, and Duke's composure is maintained thanks to years of training as a Buddhist monk. We turn the corner now to witness our suicide bomber CGI animation, Exhibit G4. This animation shows just what would have happened in dramatic slow motion if the underwear bomber had been able to detonate his bomb aboard Flight 253. Notice how the blast not only tears him apart, but those closest to him. Next, people farther away are hit by flying shrapnel and bone. In the last few frames, we can see that the airplane's hull itself is breached, causing a loss of pressure that rips open the body of the airplane and sends travelers and luggage sailing earthwards. Talk about going out with a bang. Hollywood's favorite method of suicide is wrist cutting. In reality, slitting the wrists is not very effective and accounts for only 1.5% of successful suicides. It is much more effective to use a larger blade on more important arteries and organs. In Exhibit G2, we see a samurai committing seppuku with his knife called a tanto. He drives the blade deep into his abdomen and slices. Seppuku was only for samurai and part of an elaborate ritual that was performed in cases of defeat or dishonor, or meted out as a form of capital punishment. Once he's done disemboweling himself, the second, whom you see behind him, will decapitate him. His wife at G3 will commit jigai by slicing the arteries of her neck. She has already tied her knees together to maintain her dignity in death. Invading armies seeking women to rape and enslave would often find Japanese women already dead, their knees tied together in mockery of the invader's intentions. On to Exhibit G4. Firearms are by far the preferred and most effective weapon for suicide and account for more than half of all successful suicides in America. During a 1974 newscast, host Christine Chubbuck declared, "In keeping with Channel 40's policy of bringing you the latest in blood and guts and in living color, you are going to see another first, attempted suicide." She then fatally shot herself in the head while on the air. Please pause this recording while you step into our small theater, film at 11, to view the footage of Christine's final moments. At G6, we have a depiction of the gruesome suicide of Isokelekel, a warrior king from 17th century Micronesia. Isokelekel bent over a young palm tree, tied it to his penis, and then let the sapling go. His penis was torn off and he bled to death. Surely there are easier ways to go. We move on next to our large-scale diorama of Mount Mihara on the island of Itsuoshima in Japan. Mihara is an active volcano which erupted in 1986 and 1990. Back in 1933, 21-year-old Kyoko Matsumoto threw herself into the crater of the volcano and started a trend in Japan. In the following year, 944 people committed suicide at Mount Mihara. A fence was erected to prevent access, which had to be topped with barbed wire after another 619 people scaled the fence to successfully kill themselves. Death by volcano is a pretty sure bet. If the fall itself doesn't kill you, there are still contact burns, radiant heat, and asphyxiation from volcanic gases. Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night is made possible by a grant from Smythe and Olive Firearms. If you're going to go, go in style. This concludes your guided tour of the Suicide Museum. But wait, you aren't finished yet. Ahead of you are our Au Revoir video booths, where you can record a farewell video message and send it up to 5 email addresses. The video terminals are not included in your ticket price, but they take PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, or American Express. Our video booths are made possible by sponsorship from Borean Bleach. Borean, nothing gets out blood stains better. On your right is our Last Call Cafe, where amateur chefs serving community time for violent crimes prepare gourmet dishes, including our signature fugu sashimi, bullfrog Namibian style, silver stripe blassop, and wild mushroom omelette made from mushrooms gathered by the legally blind. And of course, you will want a glass of grape flavorade to wash it down with. If you survive lunch, please head back down to our gift shop, Pandora's Box, where you can purchase mementos of your visit today and gifts for loved ones. Our collection of music includes Donnellan's Music for the Dying and our fundraiser Kate's L compilation album with such suicidal hits as Ode to Billy Joe, Suicide is Painless, Paint It Black, Hey Hey My My, and Baby Don't Fear the Reaper. If you are a reader, we have copies of Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar, Jeffrey Eugenides' The Virgin Suicides, and of course Romeo and Juliet and Anthony and Cleopatra. Don't miss out on our limited edition Notes from the Suicide Museum, showcasing all the suicide notes we have in our collection, with translation and commentary. We also have books for those younger loved ones, such as Where's Mommy? And Baby's First Funeral. For the more practically minded, we have plenty of rope, blades, priced from bargain basement box cutters up to replica ceremonial Japanese tanto, a variety of poisonous chemicals, and plans for assisted suicide machines designed by Dr. Kevorkian, Exit International, and Philip Nitschke. For all your purchases, we provide a handy exit bag. Check out our Suicide Museum logo wear and cool swag in our online shop at cafepress.com/thesuicidemuseum. If you have purchased a black ticket and filled out all the requisite paperwork, you may access our interactive exhibit through the black door on your right at any time. Please note that there is no exit from the interactive exhibit, and visitors still alive at closing time will be gassed. Remember that the Suicide Museum depends on sponsors and on the generosity of its visitors. There's still time to leave us something in your will. If you didn't purchase a black ticket, be sure to come back next month for Kamikazes of World War II. This educational exhibit is sponsored by 13 Knots Cords. 13 Knots will give you enough rope. Please deposit this player in the convenient yellow bin and enjoy the rest of your life, however short that may be. The Suicide Museum depends on the generosity of its visitors. Please donate at www.thesuicidemuseum.com.